in the early 1900s, there was the Chicago World Fair, and they featured belly dance for the very first time to a Western audience. The belly dancer was named Little Egypt, and she was dressed in this little bra with beads hanging from it and a skirt with lots of beads and coins hanging from it.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
Hi, my name is Siham Chaudhary. I'm a 22-year-old McMaster student, and I'm here to talk about belly dancing. It's a very ancient form of dance. It's been around for many, many centuries, and people debate as to where the origins really are. Most people say that it's come from Egypt, but if you look into dance from other countries and other ethnic dances, you'll notice that there are a lot of similarities between the movements. And there's different forms of belly dance today. There's the traditional Egyptian one where there's an intimate relationship between a drummer and a dancer. There's also cabaret forms of dance that are performed in restaurants, in parties and whatnot. The dances are also different from which area of the Middle East you're looking at. The Egyptian belly dance is more structured and staccato, whereas Iranian belly dance and Turkish belly dance have more fluid movements in them. And it's different throughout the Middle East from each country. There is a stereotype about belly dancing that it's very sexual and it's very erotic. And there is a sensual component to belly dance, but it's not always about being tawdry. And one of the reasons why this image has evolved is because of the Western propagation of this stereotype. In the early 1900s, there was the Chicago World Fair, and they featured belly dance for the very first time to a Western audience in that World Fair. And the belly dancer was named Little Egypt. And she was dressed in this little bra with beads hanging from it and a skirt with lots of beads and coins hanging from it. And it was very unique and, you know, interesting to people because they'd never seen anything like it before. And then, of course, Hollywood loved that image and capitalized on it. And even today, Western media has affected the Eastern form of dance. We still have those cabaret-style costumes with the beaded bras and the skirts with the many coins and tassels and whatnot. But we also have the traditional form of belly dance, which a woman wears a dress, a long dress, and then just ties a sash around that dress to emphasize her hips, because that's where most of the movement is coming from. So there are these two basic forms of the belly dance itself, if we were to categorize it in any form. And today, it's very popular amongst women of many different backgrounds. I checked some belly dancing websites on the internet, and they actually have a group in the States. They wear shamrock print dresses with puffed sleeves and corset-type bras, and they perform on St. Patrick's Day, and it's wonderful. These women are they come in all shapes and sizes. That's one of the things about belly dance as an art form. You're not required to have a particular body type, whereas in order to succeed in ballet or jazz or Broadway shows and whatnot, you're expected to be of a certain form. One of the things about belly dance and other forms of dance is that it's a bit healthier on your body than other forms. Ballet and tap stress a lot of importance on your feet, for example. And in ballet, as beautiful an art form as it is, it tends to deform your feet. It tends to ask your feet to do certain things that perhaps naturally your body is not meant to do. Whereas in belly dance, it places a lot more emphasis on fluid motions and rounded ones, and it's healthier in that respect. It places a lot of emphasis on posture and breathing techniques to help the movements flow better, and that also unifies the whole dance itself. I personally combine a lot of elements of different dance forms into my form of belly dance. I know the traditional forms. I know all the techniques that you're supposed to use in order to have a good performance. But I come from a varied background. My family is from Bangladesh. So I grew up learning Bengali folk dance as well as some Indian classical dance. And that comes into my form of belly dance as well, especially with the hand movements and certain body positions that if somebody who was well-versed in Indian classical dance would be able to recognize it right away when I perform my belly dance. Recently, I have started research Hawaiian hula dance because I found the movements very, very similar to belly dance, and I was very interested to see like how the art forms actually overlap each other in its technique. Today, it's becoming very, very popular in the media. Performers like Britney Spears use belly dance techniques in her dance videos. And of course there's Shakira, who does traditional belly dance in her videos. It's not choreographed. It is a movement to her music that is completely natural. And that is something that belly dance really stresses, that it's a natural way of movement for a woman. There are men who belly dance. There are schools that teach male belly dancing, and they pretty much move the same way that women do. If you go to an Arabic nightclub in Toronto, you will see men and women belly dancing together. There are some movements that the men don't do because they're extremely feminine movements, but it is a social dance as well as a performance piece, as well as an ancient art form.
Yeah. You are listening to Radio Free School on CFMU.
I brought two articles with me to show how belly dance is being used as an art form to tell stories and to make a statement about current events. This article is called 1002 Nights, and it features the play 1002 Nights, and the actress, her name is Tara Rosling, and this was performed in Toronto last year. It's a story about a woman who is a stripper, and she decides to leave her venue and become a belly dancer instead. And the play actually depicts her talking about her sorrows and her dreams through belly dance. And I liked this picture because it's very provocative, and it really speaks about one of the stereotypes there is about belly dancers, is that they're just another form of erotic dancer instead of a highly valued art form. And this entire play is actually about how a woman comes to terms with herself through belly dance. It's used as the vehicle to tell her story, which I thought was very, very interesting. This is me at McMaster University at the steps of Gilmore Hall. I performed a belly dance to talk about the sorrow and of the tragedy of September 11th in 2001. And I used a veil to signify the bloodshed, and in the end, the hope that we all have that we will find peace in this world and find a way to end strife and war and terror. And we did not say that this was a belly dance in the actual program. We called it a dance of peace because it was a solemn event, and I didn't want to offend anybody by calling it a belly dance because it cannot escape the connotations that come with it. But it was a belly dance nonetheless. I saw a video, I believe it was in November or so, a woman in Toronto had made a documentary about belly dance and belly dance in Canada. And she spoke to many dancers in Montreal. She even went across the sea and spoke to some dancers in Israel. And I think now it's very pertinent to talk about this particular topic. She found a woman who taught belly dancing in Israel, and she had children who came to learn from her who were Palestinian and Israelis. And these children whose many generations of Palestinians and Israelis have been in war with each other, and these kids were able to come together and just dance together. And she had a big hafla at the end of her school year. A hafla is a party, basically, where you get together just to belly dance. And all these children came together and they belly danced. Their mothers came, Palestinian women and Israeli women came together. And for one night, they forgot their differences. They let it all slip away, and they just partied. They danced together. And I think that speaks volumes about how belly dance is really becoming very much a part of everyday life About dress, it really depends on what kind of venue you're performing in. If you are a cabaret dancer, you're kind of expected to wear the cabaret costume, which happens to be the beaded bra and the flowing skirt with the scarf and with tassels and whatnot. And there are many different costume types. There are performers who go to cultural shows and they perform together as a group. Cabaret dancers, their costumes are beautiful, I have to admit, and they do perform very, very beautifully. However, I have been to a few Arab clubs, and there is this custom of putting money down the dancer's costume, and that is something I personally do not appreciate. I think belly dancing is a high art form. It's something like ballet. People go to a hall, a theater, to watch this dance. They pay money, they dress up nicely, and they go to watch this performance. I think when people degrade it to the point of a woman just dancing for money, and it really takes away from the entire art form to me. I find it very spiritually fulfilling and very healthy for me. And to see that, to I'm at this point where I'm enjoying this woman's dance, and then this man comes up and starts putting money down her skirt or something, and it's just like, I personally get very, very offended. A lot of people say that, oh, it's part of Middle Eastern culture, it's part of this and part of that. And I don't think that's necessarily so. I've grown up in the Middle East myself. I think I have every right to say what I think about it. There are groups that perform. There is an International Academy of Belly Dance in the United States. It's actually quite popular in the United States. There are many belly dancing schools there. There's also one in Toronto, and they perform in dance shows, in cultural shows, and they perform with their musicians on stage. And sometimes they perform, you know, without their musicians. And it really depends on the form of dance that you're doing. There is a type of belly dance which is a kind of a gypsy-based belly dance with a lot of flamenco moves and Spanish music influence. So the costume for that might be a bit different, in that they might wear long flowing gypsy skirts with peasant blouses instead of the bra and skirt ensemble. And when you're performing traditional belly dance like the Egyptian style or the Kuwaiti style or, you know, an Iranian one, the kind of costume that I'm wearing right now, which is called a baladi costume, it's a long dress with long flowing sleeves with many sequins and a hip scarf just tied around the hips to emphasize those movements when they come about. And there are different props that people also use in their costumes. There are cane dances where a woman twirls a cane above her head while she's moving her hips. There's also a sword dance, and this dance has a lot to do with balance and incredible technique. The sword dance, a woman sometimes dances with the sword balanced on her head or balanced on her hip while she bounces her hip, and the sword doesn't fall off. There's some, not acrobatic, but maybe some gymnastic moves that some women have incorporated into their belly dance. They might do a very sensual, fluid veil dance and do some floor work by sliding into the splits and moving their arms and then, you know, getting back up very, very slowly. So a lot of those kind of movements come into play as well. And it's a very vibrant dance. It's very joyful when they do the shimmies. And at the same time, it's extremely feminine with all the soft movements and placing emphasis on circles and curves rather than on lines.
Do you look at yourself with your eyes open wide and wonder who you are and what secrets inside? Have you ever thought you'd like to change, to be taller or smaller or just rearranged? Take a look at yourself and the person you see. You're the way you were meant to be. hair is all right, whether curly or straight, or none at all, you're still first rate. Your eyes are fine, and so are your feet. Your body is great, you're really complete. The things that matter are the things inside. You have beauty, so don't run and hide. Shine like the sun, you can if you try. Give love and warmth, then you'll really know why. You were born here on earth and meant to be. Say it right now, it's great being me. La 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 la. La 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 la. The things that matter are the things inside. You have beauty, so don't run and hide. Shine like the sun, you can if you try. Give love and warmth, then you'll really know why. You were born here on earth and meant to be. Say it right now, it's great being me.
Come on, give it a try. Here we go.
It's great being me. 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 It's great being me.
You are listening to Radio Free School on C.
I learned that policemen are my friends. I learned that justice never ends.
Free Radio, Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, 97.9 FM, and Fredericton, New Brunswick.
What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of mine? What did you learn in school today, dear little boy of
mine? I'm 7 years old. I'm going to talk about Lord of the Rings, the Two Towers movie. It's a really good movie because it's so much fun. I went to watch it like the day before yesterday, and I thought it was good. But there was a lot of parts that weren't true in the book. For instance, elves showed up in Helm's Deep, so in the movie they didn't in the book. They did not do it in the book, though. Then, Farmer takes him to Gondor in the movie, but that's not in the book. Frodo looks like he's going to give the ring to the Nazgul, but that's not in the book. In the movie. Then the Ents said that they weren't going to go to Isengard for the battle. And Pippin and Merry said take us south instead of west. And then all the Ents showed up because Treebeard saw all his friends being cut down and then they all went to battle, but that wasn't in the book. It was just that the Ents decided to go. And that was in the book, but it wasn't in the movie. And it was said they changed it so much in the movie. So anyone that hasn't read the book, before you watch the movie, read the book. Because otherwise you're going to be confused. Well, there was some things that were truthful. Some that weren't. So I liked it. It was a good movie.
So, having read the book and then seeing the movie, did the characters look just like you thought they would?
Not all of them. Like, the Balrog didn't look like it was in my imagination. Mm-hmm. It looked like a fiery monster. In my imagination, it was a dark shadow like a Nazgul. And he had a horse and a whip and a flaming red sword.
Were there scary parts in
it? No. Nothing seemed scary to me. Maybe it would to anyone else, to someone else, but not to me. But some people might think it's scary, some people won't. Probably a lot of people would, but some people don't. There was a few funny parts. Well, the first one was Gimli couldn't see over the wall and he told Legolas, "Can't you find a better spot for me?" And another was Gimli told Strider, "I can't jump over this wall. Can you throw me over? Please don't tell the elf." Strider goes, "Okay," and throws him over, then jumps on after, and then Gimli's fighting orcs. He can't even see his head. But you can see Strider. He's a tall guy. He's the tallest man.
What about the women?
Oh, I like them. Oh, and if you watch the movie and you think Eowyn's scared, then you're very wrong. She actually wanted to fight. She actually did fight in the book, but not in the movie. So the movie's really so untruthful. If you read the book, then you'll... Then you watch the movie, then you're going to be shocked how much they change it. It's still good, though. I am actually doing a play of Lord of the Rings, but I'm not going to change the things. It's the Fellowship of the Rings. First, I think I'll want to see the movie of the Fellowship of the Rings. The end!
I'm gonna wrap myself in paper. I'm gonna daub myself with glue. Stick some stamps on the top of my head. I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L. 8S1CO.